The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Babe, did you see that Moto Casino is giving a $1,776,000 worth of prizes?
That's why they're called America's Social Casino. Celebrating the birth of America bigger than anyone else.
You can win incredible experiences at NASCAR and F1 races and a grand prize of 1 million sweeps coins.
So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hour number two, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick and Chase McCabe here with you. Braves get the win in the opening game of the World Series last night over the Astros. Great performance by the Braves. Another one of these modern-day performances by the pitching staff where it's everybody chips in and gets their outs. And, of course, the Braves continue to get these great contributions from the players they acquired near the trade deadline. So to give us some insight, we are really, really thrilled to be talking once again to Tom Glavine, the outstanding Hall of Fame left-hander, joining us here on the show again today. And Tom, it's great to have you with us again. We were at the hockey game watching the Predators and the Sharks last night, had the game on in a suite watching the World Series.
I don't blame you, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. I knew you'd appreciate that a little bit. Yeah. In fact, I wanted to tell you up front, my daughter goes to school at Northeastern, and my son is a high school baseball player, so we conveniently, when we were moving her in, walked down to the baseball office and did meet your brother Mike, who is, of course, an outstanding baseball coach at Northeastern. For people that don't know, they have a very good program up there. So that was a pleasure to meet him.
Oh, good. Well, let me know if you need any help getting your son in there. So,
okay. It sounds like you might have some pull with your brother there. But that,
maybe, yeah.
Well, he doesn't need much help. They've got a heck of a team, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's done a good job up there. I'm proud of him. He's done real well.
Well, Tom, let's talk about last night. You know, it's interesting. We were thinking back historically. The World Series has been played since 1903. In fact, at Northeastern, you can go to the spot where the first World Series was played. It's right in the smack dab of the middle of the campus there. That's a little fun fact for you. But nobody has ever hit a home run in the first at-bat of the World Series until last night.
Yeah, that was, obviously a great start for the Braves, but I got to admit, that was something I was a little surprised by. You'd think after all these years, somebody would have done that. But, like they say, if you hang around long enough, you'll see things you've never seen before. So last night was another one of those.
Boy, that's for sure. And Tom, you have seen a lot, but isn't it amazing how this has all come together for the Braves, these acquisitions that they made and how they continue to go on a roll? You've seen it before. It's just amazing how a player who's a good player but not a Hall of Fame or anything can catch fire and seem to do no wrong, like Eddie Rosario and some of the other guys are doing right now.
Well, how many times do you say it, really in any sport that, you take a guy and all of a sudden a change of scenery and he's a different player. And I think you've seen that certainly with a couple of the guys the Braves acquired, certainly Soler and Rosario. Adam Duvall was having a great year with the Marlins. And I almost feel like more than anything else, having done a number of Braves-Marlins games and seeing the damage that Duvall did against the Braves all year long, it was almost like, hey, let's get that guy back on our team so he can stop doing to us what he's been doing. So, but he's had a great year and he continues to do so. But Soler and Rosario really have turned their seasons around. And I think, like I keep saying to people, you look at these moves that they made, none of them will knock your socks off. Not one of those guys would anybody have said, all right, there's the guy that's going to put the Braves over the top. Now they're World Series contenders. Collectively, that's what they've been. You know, some of it, Jock Peterson, obviously, out of necessity when Acuna got hurt. But then the rest of the guys, you know, I think more than anything, one thing Alex tends to do, Alex Anthopoulos, the Braves GM, is you know, he tries to go with depth. And I think that's what a lot of these moves were depth moves. And it gave Snit some options both with his lineup offensively. It gave him options on mixing and matching with his outfield. And it's just all paid dividends. And it just, you know, it just goes to show you, you just a change of scenery, you just don't know how a guy's going to react. Fortunately, they've all reacted really well to Atlanta.
I'm talking to Tom Glavine, the Hall of Fame pitcher. And Charlie Morton throws 16 pitches on a broken leg before he finally exits the game. And unfortunately, the Braves lose him for the World Series. A tough situation to be in because you had the veteran that, you know, you're going to use him for a Game 7 in the NLCS if you needed him. You had him Game 1 for the World Series. You wanted to anchor that rotation with him, a guy that's been there before. But now it's going to be up to the young guys and the inexperienced guys. So how big of a blow is it to lose Charlie for the rest of the way?
Well, you know, it's definitely a blow, no question about it. I mean, you know, when you're looking at how to map out a series, you know, obviously Charlie was going to go again. Now that's a big hole they're going to have to fill. Fortunately, he was able to give them enough last night to put them in a position to win the game, which they did. So, you know, at least you got one start out of them and you won that game. But no question, they're going to have to figure some things out. But, you know, look, it's an era now where that quote-unquote bullpen game has become more and more a part of the game. So, you know, the Braves certainly are going to have to figure something out in that regard. I mean, it's certainly going to be important now for Max Fried to go out there tonight and have a big ball game. You know, Ian Anderson in Game 3 is going to have a big ball game. And then, like I said, you're going to have to figure it out from there. But I guess silver lining, at least you were able to win the game that Charlie pitched in before he got hurt.
You know, I'm sure you've been asked this, and maybe you and Max have talked, you know, if somebody's like, hey, can I get some advice, you know, from someone that's been in that situation before like you have. But is there really the right amount of advice you can give a guy that's never pitched in the World Series? Or do you basically just say, hey, you got to go out there and do it? You just have to experience it for yourself because it's going to be a different situation than anything that you faced in your career. But how would you go about answering that as Max gets ready to make his first World Series start?
You know, I obviously get asked that question a lot, and I think my standard answer is this. You know, for me, I liken my first playoff experience to when I first got called up to the big leagues. You know, when you get called up to the big leagues, you have that natural tendency to think, okay, now I've got to be a lot better. I've got to be a lot more consistent, which you do have to be more consistent. But in terms of thinking you have to be a lot better, every breaking ball you throw has to be the best curveball that's ever been thrown, every changeup the same thing. And I think what I'm saying is you when you come to the big leagues initially, you give hitters way too much credit. And the one thing everybody tells you when you get called up to the big leagues, particularly pitchers, hey, keep doing what you were doing in the minor leagues to get here because that's good enough at this level. And it is. But it's really hard to believe that until you go out there and you see it, right? And I think that more than anything, when you go out there as a young pitcher and you struggle a little bit when you first get called up, it's not that your pitches aren't good enough. It's just the consistency at which you throw those good pitches, right? You can throw a handful of bad pitches in the minor leagues and get away with it. You don't get away with it in the big leagues. So the consistency is probably the bigger thing than just the pure stuff. And I think my postseason was the first way, that way. My first postseason start in 91 against the Pirates, sure, I was nervous. I get nervous before every start. But I think in my mind, I put a lot of pressure on myself to be better and to almost be perfect because of the situation and the magnitude and all that stuff. And I think the guys that are able to put that behind them and just treat it as much as they can like any other game, experience or not, are the guys that are successful. Now, in Max's case, he's got some playoff experience to fall back on, and I think that's going to be important for him. Sure, this will be his first World Series game, and that, look, anytime there's a first, there's some emotions you have to deal with, but you know, I think his playoff experience will help him tonight. Certainly a one-game lead is going to help him relax tonight. There's no question about that. But, you know, again, it gets back to that age-old question, too. Would you rather have talent or experience when you get to this portion of the season? Obviously, you'd love to have both. But the important thing for the quote-unquote inexperienced guy is to be able to keep those emotions in check. And I think you saw the Astros starting pitcher last night had a hard time keeping his emotions in check, and that's where experience pays off.
No question about it. Tom Glavine is with us, and Tom, I'm rooting for Max Fried to go deep into the game. That certainly would help the rest of the staff. He's capable of doing it, but I know you get asked this all the time. It is unreal how it keeps going to the next level, how they expect less and less from the starter. They almost don't dare let the starter, even a good starter, sometimes face the lineup a third time. You were constantly, you and John Smoltz and Greg Maddux, always assuming and planning, how am I going to get the guy out the third and the fourth time? And we have completely lost that. I hope someday that it could cycle back to that, but I'm not sure.
I hope it does too. But, you know, and you're right. It's funny because, you know, obviously I've done a lot of interviews these last couple of days with the Braves being in the World Series, and I've been asked that question every single time. And, you know, I haven't really talked to anybody, whether it be you guys in the profession you're in or just casual fans, that don't say, dude, what is up with the bullpen? Why are they going to the bullpen so much, right? And I think it's a problem for baseball because I do. I mean, I know – the outcomes end up being, you know, good a lot of the times, and that's how it goes. But fans don't like watching this, right? And I'd have to say I put myself on that side as well. Now, I don't blame the starting pitchers solely for this because, again, like I've said, my generation, you know, yeah, we our goal was to get deep into the ballgame, and that meant at least the seventh inning. We were kind of on the beginning edges of the closer. And then inevitably the setup man and certainly pitch counts. So I think worst case scenario for us, it was, you know, we want to hand the ball over to the bullpen with no more than six outs. And that's kind of how we were brought up in a five-man rotation, and that's what we did. Now, the generation before us thought we were soft. You know, right. Nolan Ryan and Phil Niekro and those guys were, you know, making 40-something starts a year and pitching 300-something innings. But I'm a big believer that you're a product of the environment that you're brought up in. And I say that because today's guys, it's not like they don't have the talent to do it. They're just being brought up in an environment where they're not allowed to do it. They're being told they can't do it. You can only go five innings. You can't flip a lineup a third time. And I don't necessarily think it's all their fault. Now, where I think some of it is maybe their fault, but there again, not completely, is, you know, so much of today's game is predicated on stuff, and it's stuff, stuff, stuff. Everything's got to be swing and a miss. These guys in today's game don't know how to pitch the contact the way we did. Like, mm-hmm. There's very few first pitch outs or very few, you know, one or two pitches into the end of the at-bat and there's a weak ground ball somewhere on the infield, right? And again, I don't know that it's their fault. I remember I was watching the game the other night, the Braves-Dodgers game with Buehler on the mound, and there was so much talk early in the game about how Buehler at you know, maybe three innings into the game only had one swing and a miss. And to me, I'm like, so what? You know, if he's pitching a good ball game and he's pitching to weak contact, I don't really care how many swings and misses he has. But that just shows you where the emphasis of the game has gone. And I think until you truly get back to teaching guys how to locate pitches and pitch to contact, then I think you're going to see more of this because – you know, with all the swings and misses and high pitch counts, whatever, it's hard for guys to get deep into a ball game.
Tom, when talking about the bullpen game and having to go that route, you know, I would assume Ian Anderson's going to get the ball for game three based on how the rotation has gone. But would you consider, knowing that you're going to have to go to the bullpen game at some point, would you consider that more for game three and then save Ian for game four? Or would you let what happens tonight dictate that decision?
I mean, look, I can sit here, sure as we're sitting here, and tell you that all of that's going to be in play. If it was me and it was what I was accustomed to playing, there's no question in my mind Ian Anderson starting game three. You know, I mean, that, like you said, that's your rotation. That's the way it's been set up. And whether you're up 2-0 or 1-1, really, in my mind, has no bearing on that, right? I mean, some of it could very well be predicated on you know, tonight. You know, like you said, it's going to be important for Max to get deep into the game tonight. I would imagine A.J. Minter's not available tonight. So, you know, you've got a hold there. So they're going to have to maneuver some things tonight in the bullpen. They're not going to be able to have their, you know, Minter, Jackson, Matzik, Will Smith tonight, I wouldn't think. I'd be shocked if Minter was available tonight. So, you know, if Max can get deep into the game, and by deep into the game, I mean at least six innings, then, you know, I think that alleviates some of it, and maybe you have some more options for game three. But, you know, look, in my mind, I'm still a traditionalist in that regard. You have your three horses that are your top of your rotation guys, and that's what we're going to roll with, and then we'll figure out game four when we get there.
Tom, it's been a pleasure talking to you as always. Enjoy your work for the Braves, and obviously, open invitation. I know you have your own connections, but if you ever want to come to a hockey game and be our guest, that is always
an option for you.
I may take you up on that. Okay. I love Nashville, and I've wanted to see a game up there, so, you know, that might happen.
Okay, sounds great. Tom, good luck to the Braves, and thanks again for joining us today.
All right, have a good day, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Tom Glavine, Hall of Fame left-hander. Oh, so great good. To get his insights during the World Series. That's a pleasure for us. Not always easy to get that level of insight while it's going on there, but I love what he does with Bally.
And obviously, yeah, your colleagues.
I'd like to.
I mean, his insight on pitching, you know, obviously, yeah, with the level that he did it at, is just, you know, unmatched. And so that, to get that and to get his view, and I mean, there's more we could have asked him, for sure. I mean, and he knows Brian Snicker. They've worked together for a long time in that organization, but it's just crazy to see how much the game has changed in that. Like, I was gonna bring up with him, if Bobby Cox walked to the mound in the fifth inning to take the ball from him, he can't repeat what he would have said to him. He would have said, "Get the."
Well, he would
back in the
and
back
it
in
just
the dugout.
Wouldn't have been a thought if he was pitching well at all. Like, in even so, it's. Look, we got to deal with it. I know a lot of the analytics people are like, just deal with it, man. Just deal with it. But it's not as pleasurable to watch. I will always go with it. I am a hardcore baseball fan. I watched the whole game, you know, as well as the Predators game. I watched as much of it as I could. But it's tough. It's tough.
I think in this situation, like if you're Dusty Baker, who's old school, or Brian Snicker, who's old school. If you're in a situation,
you're not allowed to be old school.
But if you're in the World Series and it's an elimination game, whether it's a game 5, 6, 7, whatever, it doesn't matter. And you got a guy that's dealing, like Morton was dealing before he got
right.
Hurt.
That was a different circumstance, because he would not have come out that
right.
early.
But if you got a guy that's just absolutely dealing, like how could I don't care what the analytics are telling you. I don't care what you're. Analytics guy is handing you with a piece of paper, like, you let him go. You leave him.
And that will be something to watch for, because if the Blake Snell moment comes up and it's analytics versus feel, you know, Dusty Baker, he might go with the feel.
I think Dusty for sure would go with the
but
feel.
That
I don't know
that. That would be the push and pull, and then the result, everybody's going to go nuts on one side or the other.
I think they will show a shot of Dusty Baker. He'll bite down on that toothpick, and that's it.
Baker, toothpick's worst nightmare.
I know. You won't see him, because, like, the old school, he is old school, and he's going to be like, yeah, I got this. I don't need your.
We'll see.
Your fact sheet.
Because he works for an organization that is hardcore into those analytics. Of course, there are very few that are not these days. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll move forward. Don't forget, we will have Mike Vrabel and his press conference at noon. The Titans have
11:30.
Oh, it's 11:30. Yeah, even closer. And they have made a couple of moves. A couple of people who have been injured trying to start working their way back. We'll tell you about that when we come back, and we will count down to the Mike Vrabel press conference. You can hear it here. Big, big game against the Colts coming up on Sunday. Stay tuned. We're coming back. 11:24 a.m., Willie Donick, Chase McCabe, Darren Donick and Chase. Great stuff from Tom Glavine. At 11:30, we expect to hear from Mike Vrabel, the weekly press conference. Big game with the Colts, and it's time to play the game of Wednesday. Who's on the injured list and who's not on the injured list? Let's start with the transactions they made today.
Well, first, let me tell you this, though, that you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every day, and our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. So now that I've said that, I will tell you the transactions. Returning to practice, they remain on injured reserve, but this is good. This is encouraging. Offensive lineman Aaron Brewer, linebacker Jayon Brown, outside linebacker Derek Roberson are all eligible to return to practice but remain on IR. Running back Dontrell Hilliard has been signed to the practice squad. So those coming down just a few minutes ago as some transactions, and we'll see what Mike Vrabel has to say about them. Yesterday there were some practice or some transactions signed to the practice squad: running back Mekhi Sargent, defensive lineman Eli Ankou, released from the practice squad. A handful of players, so just some practice squad additions and subtractions yesterday.
And isn't it funny that the guys in the practice squad, you know, your first instinct is to say, oh, who cares about those guys? But the next thing you know, they're starting.
Right.
Because, like, the guy Maven, right? Greg Maven, I think his name?
Yeah. Yeah, he ended up starting.
The guy comes out of nowhere.
Dontrell Hilliard, that was interesting. He's been in the league for a couple of years now, I guess, but mainly with a practice squad guy with Houston and Cleveland. But anyway, I guess they needed more running backs. I don't really get that, but adding them to the practice squad. I'm curious, you know, I think the Julio watch continues, because once again, you saw him have some flashes early in the game and then just didn't really see much after that. So you got to wonder what the hamstring's doing. A.J. Brown appears to be, you know, coming back from not only his hamstring issues from a few weeks ago, but the food poisoning that he had. I mean, he had a great game, had his best game of the year against the Chiefs. So, but some of those names on that list returning to practice, I mean, down the stretch, that's going to be huge for you of getting Aaron Brewer. We know about the offensive line, and he's kind of the interior guy, the center guard. And, you know, they obviously have issues with Saffold and Davis there at the guard position, and then Jayon Brown and Derek Roberson. So if Jayon Brown gets healthy, I mean, what does that mean for Rashawn Evans? Because David Long's not going anywhere. He's going to keep
starting. He's a fixture. There's no question he's passed both of those guys, I think, in his importance. But you never have enough guys. I think just remember, we're not even halfway through.
Of a 17-game schedule.
They are a month from having a bye. So there are going to be guys that come and go constantly. We're just getting started here. So, you know, we talk about this in hockey a lot. The guys that make the opening night roster, the 20 that you dress, the reality is before the season's over, you're going to probably need at least 28 to 30. And as we saw last year, in a 56-game schedule, the Predators needed well over that. I think they used 36 or 38 skaters and then three goalies. So football is the same way, especially coming off of the year that they had with no training camp and everything. I wonder how the injuries are compared to a normal year, but I think it just stands to reason. You've got to always be ready for the next guy, the next guy, the next guy, and it's already happened with the Titans. You can hope that the worst is behind you, but the fact is you always have to be ready for what happens. It would be nice, for example, to have Brewer ready to go. It's, you know, he's not the greatest. They got mileage out of Kendall Lamb. I don't know if Kendall Lamb is going to be okay to play, or the guy that they signed and threw in there, the third string guy.
Corey Hart. No, it's not Corey Hart.
Greg Hart. Yes,
yeah, I think it's Greg Hart.
But, I mean, that was pretty remarkable. And then is Taylor Lewan, does he have a chance? Maybe we'll find out some clues here in a minute or two with Mike Vrabel. But I think above all these injuries, because everybody's got them, it's that mentality that's so important. Are you getting better each week? You're talking about Julio Jones. I think one thing that's starting to happen, you're starting to see the roles get defined a little bit more each week with the targets. A.J. Brown, when he's out there now, if he's right, he's clearly the number one. Julio Jones is clearly the number two, which, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think we were wondering if that was going to be the case all summer long. I don't think there's any doubt now. And now you're trying to figure out who's the number three. Remember the questions I asked you guys before? It continues to evolve. Chester Rogers maybe was emerging as that guy. Now he's hurt.
Yeah.
Josh Reynolds has gone on and off the radar. He made a contribution.
Yeah, I mean,
Westbrook Akina has jumped in there and played a role. But
Marcus
Johnson's back in the picture now. But slowly but surely, they're figuring out what guys can do, what they're not capable of. They can specialize here and there. But I like where it's going. I like overall where it's going. As long as you have A.J. Brown and you get a better picture of what you think you're getting with Julio Jones week to week.
Yeah.
He's going to be dealing with this every week.
I mean, the thing is going to be Julio is just going to be 60%, it seems.
But is it 60% every week, or is it if we manage this, we can get it up there to 65, to 70, to 75? In the meantime, let's hear the latest from Mike Vrabel.
More of as you go down the stretch of the season.
Well, I mean, I think when you touch on complementary football, you know, we have to get into drives. Obviously, we started, you know, fast offensively with the touchdown. You know, I mean, I think whether you're getting stops, whether you're getting three and outs, whether you're getting turnovers, but there's some semblance of, you know, complementary football. We were making our kicks, we were kicking touchbacks. You know, there were a lot of things that we can, you know, hope to build on.
Colts defense been living on takeaways. Mm-hmm. You put an extra emphasis with the offense this week on taking care of the football, not putting it in harm's way.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that's something that they've been known for. They do a fantastic job. You know, obviously, you know, Leonard is outstanding at it. And the rest of the unit, you know, it looks like they're all looking for opportunities. You know, whether they get them or not, they have gotten a lot, you know, leading the league. We understand how critical that's going to be able to take care of the ball, but you know, also be able to try to, you know, run whether you can't run with, you know, two hands on it and rolled over, you know, the entire time. So we're going to have to try to be aggressive with it, but also take care of it.
Allen and Mahomes attempted a lot of passes. Wentz hasn't been doing that. Important for you guys to kind of shape the game in order for the pass rush to be able to?
That would be, you know, and until you get the situation, the game situation that, you know, would dictate a team that would have to throw. You know, they have three amazing backs. Obviously, Taylor's going to probably be, you know, get the bulk of that. But you know, Hines goes in and has his plays, and Mack has been able to go in there and spell those guys. And then, you know, they've done such a great job being able to run the football that the play action pass would complement that. And they've hit shots downfield, or they've gotten, you know, long defensive pass interference penalties.
What makes Hines problematic?
Well, he's just not a receiving back. I mean, they'll run their offense with him. They'll run the football with him. They find ways, creative ways to get him the football. And he's a good player. You know what I mean? He's a good returner, he's a punt returner. He is a, you know, skilled athlete. He catches the ball easy. He runs really good routes. And, you know, he's always, you know, given us problems.
Wentz maybe look from a mobility standpoint from when you faced him and effectiveness standpoint?
I think obviously much more effective, you know, I mean, doing a really nice job. And I think that his health probably has a, you know, big reason to do with that. I think also, you know, their ability just to, you know, kind of improve as the season's gone on. This is a, you know, much better football team in all phases, you know, than the one that we saw. And you know, that was a difficult test then. You know, they're essentially 4-0. You know, they won four games in a row. I know they lost to the Ravens, but you know, they played outstanding. They just unfortunately, you know, ran into a tough night with how Lamar played there in the second half.
With that offensive line, they're getting Quentin Nelson back. How much does he kind of change or improve that offensive line, especially from a physicality standpoint?
Well, I think he brings a demeanor and attitude. I think he's one, you know, a Pro Bowl player, somebody, you know, a captain. So it looked like, you know, it gave them a, you know, shot energy, a physicality, see him finishing and trying to move people off the line of scrimmage.
You only given up one sack total over the last two games. It didn't quite go that well over the first four. What's happened to such a drastic improvement?
We touched on this. We're focused on the Colts, and it's going to be a huge challenge to protect these guys. They got a bunch of edge guys that play hard, that rotate in there. Buckner is obviously a very gifted, long player. So, you know, right now our focus is on improving. You know, to your point, to your question, we have improved in that area. I think, obviously, it starts with the protection. It starts with guys getting into routes, you know, recognizing man or zone, being open, you know, when the quarterback needs to throw the football, all of those things that we're going to have to do, you know, this week to try to you know, help slow some of that pass rush down.
Can you mention leverage and, you know, looking for help for Molden earlier in the year when he was struggling a bit? Wondering if you've seen improvement in those regards from him, you know, over the last few games?
Yeah, I mean, I think Elijah's improved and has, you know, helped us in when we've blitzed them and in the zone coverage, being able to reroute guys and then, you know, obviously, you know, hold up in man.
You make it a point of emphasis at all with the players and coaches that what a win would do as far as taking up the upper hand in the division race, or do you just kind of push that aside and focus on just the game plan ask at hand?
Well, we're focused on improving. We're focused on improving each week right now. We're focused on fundamentals. We're focused on, you know, the matchups that we're going to have in the game against the Colts. You know, we understand the, you know, the magnitude of division games, especially, you know, on the road, how challenging that will be. I don't know if we've talked about the impact or the, you know, anything past just this week.
How much has AJ quickly changed the dynamic in terms of separation and play action success when he's out there?
I mean, I think AJ's got a good skill set for some of those passes. He's, you know, fearless to go inside to catching the football. You know, he goes and attacks it with his hands. It doesn't let it get into his body. Those are contested throws that normally, you know, when they get into their, you know, body, those are tough to catch. So, you know, he continues to develop and improve, and, you know, we'll need every bit of his best this week to give ourselves a chance.
Watching them on, I guess, Monday night, they think they drew 3-4 penalties downfield. I mean, how much of that is from a strategic standpoint, throw it up so you can draw a penalty, and what do you maybe tell your DBs in trying to keep some of that from happening?
You know, I mean, we all saw them. We've watched them. They've hit a lot of those plays down the field. They've gone and caught them, you know, whether that be, you know, Pittman or, you know, T.Y., a lot of it was the ball was underthrown. You know, sometimes when the ball is underthrown and you're not playing the football and the receiver does a nice job of going back and attacking the football, you know, they get those calls. And that's something that we've tried to follow the trend around the league is, you know, trying to, you know, play the football, you know, trying to understand, you know, where the ball is. Oh, and then you run into, well, then it's not underthrown and you're looking back for the ball and then they get separation. So I think that there is a fine line, but our ability to play the football while it's in the air, you know, is something that has to continue to improve. You know, it hurt us early in the year, and it'll be huge Sunday. You know, that's something that cost us early, and, you know, hopefully we've learned from it.
Coach, how nice is it to get few guys actually back at practice today? I know still on that IR, but just getting some healthy bodies out there.
Yeah, I mean, just to get those guys back into to meetings and get them back on the field, see where they're at from a football standpoint, and then as we work our way through the week, we can evaluate, you know, whether they think they can help us this week.
Enjoy seeing a guy like Maben, you know, who's come in and cut, you know, a few times here, getting the chance like he did and you know, coming through.
Sure. You know what I mean? Who wouldn't? You know, he's a great guy. He's a great person. He's been with us, left, came back, and jumped right in, learned what to do quickly with the game plan, went and played. And, you know, I don't know how you couldn't be happy for guys like that.
Is there something about his skill set you know, that worked especially well against Kansas City as opposed to maybe some of the other guys?
I wouldn't want to compare any of the players. Just felt like wanted to, you know, through the course of the week, we decided to go with Greg and see how it was going. It went well. We kind of stuck with him. We'll see where it is this week.
Is that part of the plan when you guys make roster moves during training camp, for example, guys coming and going, that you want to have as many guys out there maybe with at least a taste of having been here and knowing what you do, that if you get in a pinch, you can, you know, there might be somebody you can bring back that way?
I don't think so. I mean, because, you know, those guys could easily, you know, when you try to claim someone off the practice squad, you know, when you try to sign someone off the practice squad, that team could easily make a move to keep them, you know, and, you know, or the player would then have to decide. I don't know if that's a strategy. I think that's just sometimes kind of how it works out. And when you look out there, you're like, okay, we have familiarity. This player's been here. We kind of know what he can do or, you know, be able to comprehend in a short amount of time.
Mike, I know you guys have already, you know, played the Colts more this season, but like with a guy like D'Amico who's playing against his old team, a team he's had history with, in those kinds of situations, you ever have to talk to a guy about the emotions of maybe going back to or playing against the team he played with prior?
Yeah, probably, you know, and just to make sure that, you know, we never want to do anything that's going to hurt the team as far as, you know, from an emotional standpoint. It's an emotional game. It's a physical game. It's a violent game. And, you know, we have to be able to go to the edge and be able to, you know, to stop. And I trust that, you know, D'Amico and everybody else for that matter. I think everybody's going to be, you know, pretty tuned up, whether they have played for the Colts previously or not. So, you know, D'Amico's, you know, done everything we've asked him to do, and I'm excited as usual to watch him prepare this week and then, you know, ultimately play on Sunday.
How has that process come along just as far as incorporating some of the ideas that Coach Schwartz may have, you know, and the whole a lot of chefs in the kitchen kind of thing that we touched on in camp?
Well, you know, Jim's got a lot of experience in this league and has come in and, you know, just I never really thought of anything other than him just helping out. And I know that everybody makes a big deal about it or has tried to. He's supported. He's done everything that I've asked him to do, that Shane's asked him to do, to support, to give input, to follow up on post-game, during the game. So I don't look at it as anything other than just another member of our defensive staff and our staff that's done things that to help us win, and then we'll continue to try to do all those things. So, you know, have everything that I thought it would be, it's been, and, you know, just hope that everything that can continue. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
That's Mike Vrabel with his weekly press conference. So I don't think we got any big news out of that, but I think one of the things to keep in mind for this game, and we talked about it a lot yesterday, Chase, but I think it'll be a theme of the week. The Colts are improving. They're 3-1 in their last four. They should have won the other game. They blew it on Monday night against the Ravens. But they are climbing out of the gutter. They were 0-3. And it looked like they were going nowhere when they left Nashville with the quarterback that had two messed up ankles. Titans took care of them. But they're working their way back. If they win this game in their barn, they're one game out. Their next two games after that are the Jets and the Jags.
Right.
So the Colts are very much in this thing in their mind. And I think they'll be there all the way to the end. We're discussing the fact that we've got a long way to go. Not even halfway through a 17-game season here. A couple of things that concern me here. Michael Pittman is really emerging as an outstanding wide receiver. He's a guy that in particular is big and can go up and get it. You heard Mike Vrabel discussing pass interferences and the dynamic of throwing a deep ball and just letting a player like Pittman make a play on the ball because of his size. Sometimes you even intentionally underthrow the ball with the idea that the defensive back is just going to be racing back there and not able to turn and play the ball, you run into the receiver and it's a pass interference. The Colts had 97 yards in pass interference penalties on plays like that. I don't doubt that they're going to challenge the defensive backs for the Titans. We know that's a depleted unit.
Yeah, and I mean, they're calling those PIs, you know, a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're just, you know, you breathe on a guy, they're throwing the flag.
Right.
So.
But that one in particular is a big one. And of course, we're talking about not a 15-yard penalty. We're talking about sometimes a 30, 40-yard penalty.
Yeah.
The Titans have had, you heard Mike Vrabel refer to this, they had problems with that early in the year, giving up the big play that was caught. But also, I remember one in particular against the Jets where they just, you know, it was that exact play.
Yeah.
Where that's another 40 yards right there. They're huge chunks.
And the receivers are going to exploit that every time because they know the refs are going to call it. And Ty's going to go to the runner, as they say in baseball, and they know they're going to get that. You bring up Michael Pittman. He was targeted 12 times against the Titans in week 3. Only caught 6 of them, but 68 yards. You know, he had a really good week last week. 4 catches and 4 targets for 105 and a touchdown. You can tell he's coming into his own. So I think that is definitely somebody that they're going to have to watch out for. You know, even though T.Y. Hilton is back, Michael Pittman is becoming the number one wide receiver for that team, while T.Y. can also still hurt you. So they have the dual threat there at receiver.
He's only played one game. He's got 4 catches for 80 yards, T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any question at this point. Michael Pittman is the undisputed number one guy. They've targeted him way more than anybody else. He's got way more catches than anybody. So I think in particular he's got a good chemistry going with Carson Wentz, who's new. You know, he doesn't have the years of chemistry building with Hilton, who's been there for a long time. But I would consider Hilton more of an X factor at this point. But he's a guy that you definitely have to account for. So Wentz at this point, he's averaged 4.4 yards a carry. He's a capable runner. As we mentioned yesterday, bears repeating, he's now got 4 straight games where he has a passer rating of 102.8. That doesn't even account for his running ability. Overall, 64% completion percentage, 11 touchdowns, 1 interception. So he's not having to throw that much, but he's been effective. The whole, is this Carson Wentz thing going to work? I would have to say he has been a pretty significant upgrade from Phillip Rivers. If for nothing else, they're not turning the ball over the way they were last year. In fact, as you heard with Mike Vrabel, they're taking the ball away a lot. Their turnover differential has been very, very important in the way they've climbed back into this thing.
When we come back, there's something that Mike Vrabel was asked about that he kind of sidestepped, but I think it's an interesting topic, and we'll do that on the other side. But you can listen to the MLB postseason on ESPN 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9, all brought to you by 312 Pizza Company. Tonight, tune in to 102.5 The Game for Game 2 of the World Series as my Atlanta Braves take on the Houston Astros, the first pitch at 7:09. 312 Pizza Company in Germantown is home to the best pizza in Nashville. Head to 312 Pizza Company to grab a bite, a beer, and watch some October baseball. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game has your chance to win Preds tickets during the month of October. Just post a picture of your radio dial set to 102.5 The Game on social media, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Tag the game and use hashtag TicketDash to be instantly qualified to win. Show us your dash is brought to you by Social Furniture. Shop local, shop social. Welcome back into Darren, Donick, and Chase. It's all presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD. CBD products curated for life. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you, Darren, with the day off. So I heard something in that press conference about giving up the sack. Mike Vrabel was asked about it. He kind of sidestepped it, but they haven't been giving up as many sacks as of late. I thought that was interesting. I know you had more on that.
Well, yeah, I was going to just give out a couple of numbers because we can talk about that. How many times did you hear in that press conference, we have to improve, we have to keep improving? And I just think that is you know, it's really in anything, any team, any sport, but especially in the NFL, you can have areas of your game that are shaky early in the season, but if you can keep working on it and keep getting better at it, that's all the difference in the world. And I think that is there were two big things that were happening early in the season to them that slowly but surely they are improving, and that's how they're able to beat the Bills and the Chiefs. One, we talked about in the last segment, giving up the big play. They were giving up big chunks in the passing game. They have got that under control, at least for now. I mean, you think about a game where the Chiefs score 3 points, number one, but number two, the Chiefs are tremendous at getting those big plays. Tyreek Hill kills people with that.
No doubt.
They didn't give up any. They forced the Chiefs to work for everything that they got, and they didn't get much.
Yeah.
Even when they were way ahead, and sometimes that's when you get loose and you start giving up points. They played that perfectly last week. The other area is pass protection. Mm-hmm. It was out of control bad early. That's why they lost the Jets, even without Brown and Jones. I think they still would have won that game if they had protected the quarterback better. It's been better lately.
Yeah, well, here you go. So through seven games this year, Ryan Tannehill against Arizona, sacked six times. Three the next week. Only once against Indy. Seven, as you mentioned, against the Jets. Three against the Jags. And then zero against Buffalo, only one time last week. Now, how much of that, because it's well documented, this offensive line, it's been a revolving door, you know, with injuries going on. You've had Taylor Lewan get hurt and Kendall Lamb and Sim Brillo retire and all those things. And you have that situation. How much of it is the offensive line playing better, and how much is it Ryan Tannehill that's manipulating the pocket more, that he's using his legs and not necessarily scrambling and running for it, but just, I mean, you know, Darren brings this up all the time. You watch Brady. Brady moves up in the pocket. He drops back. He moves side to side. He manipulates the pocket, but he stays in the pocket and buys himself just enough time to get rid of the football. And Tannehill also has been known to hold on to the ball a little too long, and he's not doing that as much. So how much of it is on Ryan Tannehill? How much of it is on the offensive line? Or how much is it a combination of the two?
My observation, I would answer it much more that they're protecting him better. I don't think he's doing, in my mind, a whole lot different. It certainly helps that they're starting to get into that bread and butter, those crossing patterns off the play action. I'm seeing a lot more of that. I think they're just finding their groove. They're finding role definition in the passing game. I think also Todd Downing has evolved on and tried to figure out, how am I going to help my offensive linemen protect? How do I use the tight ends in pass protection? How do I use the running back in pass protection? I think they're getting better and more in sync with that. Now, what about the Colts? They have 14 sacks in seven games. Now, we know it's not always that number. The sack number is just one of a number of things that you look at as to how do you evaluate a pass rush. But if you look, you've got Buckner. You've got an elite defensive lineman there. The guy that leads them in sacks right now only has two. They have three guys with two. Buckner is one of them. They have a couple of guys with 1.5. So there's not one guy that has been having the great year, kind of like Landry is for the Titans. But I still look at the Colts as a pretty good defense that's sort of underachieved. Kind of like the Titans, they have injuries in the secondary as well. So they have been exploited there. Of course, the weather was a weird thing with San Fran. But I think there's going to be opportunities there for the Titans in the passing game if they can protect Tannehill again.
We'll continue this Titans conversation. A lot of moving pieces around in today's show. We're going to talk to Nate Washington when we come back. Chris Mason right after that, because he has to move. We'll do that as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 1025 The Game.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Moto Casino. Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.